You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. In the Allstate Showcase Studio, I have Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications. You can go to aileroninc.com for more information. Warren Price, our car guy, go to eurousautobody.com for more information. Now on the line, we have Senator Biss. I think it's a good collection of people. I don't know that why that anyone would be surprised by all of that.
Daniel's awesome. Right?
So wait, Senator, I you know that I never call you Daniel. It's just weird to me that Dave Lundy
Senator,
feels.
Sorry.
Yeah, there you go. I appreciate
it. I prefer Daniel. I feel like I'll always be that. And so you can get used to it and not worry about having to stay in. It's just supposed to get fired.
I prefer Senator. It's just me. I can't.
Respect.
I don't even call Katowski. I mean, well, I call him Katowski, I guess.
But Katowski's, you know, he's X.
No, but Senator.
You should just call him X.
Senator, I've been told that you are the title of the last highest office you held.
Until you're dead. And then you still are.
Senator? Is that correct? Did we lose him?
Hello?
Yeah, there you are. What?
I'm just being speechless over here. I've got nothing to say.
Very good.
A politician that has nothing to say?
I know. Well, Senator Biss, I think he is measured in his comments.
Well, and you know, you could be senator, you could just be honorable until you're dead. Right? So,
I don't. Can you be a senator and be honorable?
Well, you know, that's what you're right.
With being called honorable is it makes me feel like I'm like just one misstep away from being dishonorable.
Well, there you go. Now,
three little letters.
Are you up for re-election this year?
I'm not. I won a 4-year term in 2014.
Okay, so you've got some time.
Bravo.
Very good. Now, we have a temporary budget in place that takes us through January and actually takes care of everything from last year as well. Is that accurate?
I mean, it's not inaccurate.
Okay.
The budget bill that we passed is complicated, and it treats everything a little bit differently than it treats everything else.
Right.
So, for example, the K-12 piece of it basically funds all of this next fiscal year, which is great. The human services funds, you know, officially a year and a half, but at 65% level. So when you multiply that out, you actually wind up realizing it's funded slightly less than a year. You know, the MAP grant, it funds exactly 1 year, but other higher education, it funds slightly less. So like, depending on what area you're interested in, you get a really different answer. That's, of course, just for the spending. In the meantime, the revenue question wasn't addressed at all, so all this spending is unfunded, and the bill backlog continues to grow. So it's, to be honest, it's a bit of a mess still.
Well, one of the things I'm noticing this summer is how many teachers have taken to social media to let people know they are not able to meet the financial needs of getting their classrooms up and running. So they have started Kickstarter funds. And that's great, and I'm glad that people are donating. But at the same time, I feel like this is something – this seems like the goal of certain people in our legislature and our executive office to hear. We didn't even need to. Look, if you just leave people to their own devices, the market will take care of itself. People will help each other and step in. But I think that has a limited shelf life.
Well, it's the conservative activist Grover Norquist's, the extension of his view that you need to make government small enough that you can drown it in a bathtub. So they always want to take things and take it away from government and put it into the private sector. But when you talk about large-scale social services, the private sector is not capable of filling the hole that's created by government.
Senator?
Yeah, no, that's first of all, 100% right. You know, and I would just echo the other thing that you said, Patty, that, I mean, obviously want to put it through the PTA or the school district foundation or the Kickstarter fund or anything else when the community and parents are able to raise money. That's awesome. I wouldn't ever, you know, I would recommend that people keep on doing that. At the same time, that's sort of not how public schools are supposed to work. And there's a reason for that, which is that not every community has equal ability to provide that kind of volunteer funding.
Well, you got the teachers that are taking their own money and putting it out, and they're getting their wages cut, or they're not getting any increases. So, yeah, you know, it's like taking two steps backwards.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, if we start to say, oh, well, hey, don't worry, we can keep on cutting schools and cutting schools and cutting schools because teachers will be able to use Kickstarter to, you know, buy supplies. Well, that's going to wind up coming out of the hides of the teachers and out of the hides of the students in the communities that can least afford it. It is just a crazy way to try to actually run an education system. It's not acceptable.
Well, and that caught my attention earlier. We've known that the disparity in the city of Chicago is significant, from the students who are, you know, going to school in Inglewood, Roseland, and the Austin Gresham neighborhoods compared to the northwest side of Chicago. And I heard Arne Duncan was on with Justin Kaufman, and he used the northern suburbs as an example. But I would say the comparison is actually those neighborhoods versus Edgebrook, Norwood Park, Jefferson Park. I mean, the disparity there because of the property values, you're going to get more in those neighborhoods than you can on the south side of Chicago. Is there a way to sort of surmount this divide in our own city?
Well, inside the city, in terms of the school funding, the answer actually is absolutely yes, because the property tax levy is collected citywide by the Board of Education and distributed as they see fit. You know, so whereas the property wealth of Wilmette is never going to be captured to raise money to fund CPS, the property wealth of Lincoln Park is captured by all of CPS, which can then
really
help fund schools in Inglewood, which in fact does use it for those purposes. So to the extent that CPS is distributing funds inequitably, that's not baked in because of the property tax formulas. That's something that's a decision made by the Board of Education.
Really? Because I figured if it was property based, that's why your neighborhoods like Wildwood is so much better than the schools on the south side. I mean, I know that there's a social and economic reason behind why it's so much harder for the kids on the south side and their safety in general. But I mean, there's also the TIFs, right? You're not going to have the same TIFs in Inglewood as you do in Lincoln Square.
But fundamentally, it's a CPS call.
It's a CPS call, but the TIFs are also based on what taxes are paid.
Right, but also by neighborhood, by ward.
Yeah, but if you're going to have taxes paid in the better neighborhoods more consistently, mm-hmm. then you're going to have taxes paid for in some of the poor neighborhoods.
Does that make sense? It makes sense to me, but
the TIF dollars come out of certain wards or SSAs, and I was
here. Let me ask this, Senator: how much? Because Chicago is often blamed for so much of the problems. I heard that a lot at the end of the session, leading all the way up, and even was it July 31st? What was the day that they came up with? I don't even know. All of it runs
June 3rd.
It was Chicago was really battered around as being the source of a lot of problems. This bill is good for Chicago, but not if you live anywhere else. That kind of stuff. How much are we affecting? I mean, how much of it is it our fault?
Ooh, that's a complicated question. I mean, there are aspects of what we do as a state that are really helpful to Chicago. There are also aspects of what we do as a state that are really, really unfair to Chicago. You know, so does Chicago get some special treatment? Yeah, but some of that treatment is really negative, not positive. And, you know, Chicago also is a generator of an incredible amount of wealth in the state, as well as a tremendous amount of need. You know, so the question of how much of it is Chicago's fault, I think, is not the way I prefer to think about it.
But that's the way I heard it.
That's the way it was said. The rhetoric that, and in fact, we talked about this last time I was on the show, that the rhetoric about pointing fingers at Chicago and saying, hey, Chicago's coming for your money, if you live in the suburbs, look out, that is not just ugly, it's divisive, and it stops us from being able to make progress. And, you know, I live in the suburbs, and I represent the suburbs, and guess what? The well-being of the community I represent is totally reliant on Chicago thriving, and vice versa. And if we can't recognize as a state that we rely on each other, not just morally, which is to say, hey, morally, of course I should want people to have a good life outside of my own neighborhood, but also economically, which is to say that my constituents who commute to Chicago need to commute to a place where there's a healthy economy and they have jobs, and vice versa. And unless we recognize that and make policy that way and have our discourse that way, we're just going to fail as a state. And so I would say the question isn't how much of it is Chicago's fault. I would say the question is how can we all come together as a state and solve the problem in a way that works for everybody.
Well, in the sense of unfairness, there's the one issue that is most often talked about is the fact that Chicago residents pay for the pensions of Chicago Public Schools as well as they pay into the state system to pay the pensions for the rest of the state. Whereas if you're in the suburban school district, you don't pay. You pay for the suburban schools but you don't pay for the city schools. So it's exactly the opposite of what people would expect. And it's exactly the opposite of the fairness that you would think. And as a suburban resident myself and a constituent of Senator Bissess, it's going to cost me more money, but it just doesn't make any sense. And so much of what we have built in the state is kind of cascading. It doesn't make any sense, but this is how we've been doing it for a long time. And so it's hard to look, and this is where people like people of goodwill and who really try to solve these problems like Daniel really are confronted with just an intractable situation, because you get into situations where if it's just a matter of, hey, let's take a zero-based approach and just say what would make sense, what kind of system should we build that makes the most sense, you can't fly. It will never fly because of the politics of it. Is that a fair way to put it, Daniel?
I think it's absolutely true. And, you're right. You can't just pretend the world doesn't exist and say, hey, let's just close our eyes and imagine how we'd like it to be and build it that way. We have to take where we start from seriously and say we're going to make incremental change over time. But, that pension example is a really important one. And again, there are examples that run the other direction. There are examples of ways in which certain policies are really beneficial to Chicago. But the thing about the pension issue, where Chicago is paying for 100% of its own teachers' pension costs as well as for a kind of a share of all the suburban and downstate teachers' pension costs, is, let's not forget our pension debt is big, and therefore the numerical cost of pensions as a percentage of government is really significant. And so if this one piece of how we do things is really tilted aggressively against Chicago, and it's a really big piece, that's a sign that Chicago, needs help for reasons that have nothing to do with its own doing.
We have a listener who would like to join the conversation, and that is Mark. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. How's everybody?
We're doing good, I think. I'm going to answer for everybody. Go ahead, Mark.
Good.
Great.
Go ahead, Mark.
Just a small example of how the disparity, and I'm almost hesitant to describe it because it's in some ways insignificant, but it symbolizes the disparity. A school in Esbrook, say a K-8 school, can hold an art fair of the students' art, and the parents come and spend $50,000 buying the students' artwork, which it's obviously donations. They can make tens of thousands of dollars in one night, which obviously in less affluent areas, poor areas, nothing like that could be done. The parents couldn't afford that. They would want to, but they can't do that. So the ability of affluent areas to raise money on their own is huge. And you guys are doing a great job playing out the pension issue, where Chicago taxpayers pay for two pensions and downstate pays for one.
Yeah, if I was saying on the floor of the Senate, every time I heard someone say this is great for the suburbs, I would just say Chicago two pensions.
Right,
Senator. Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself doing that or not?
I try to rein myself in when I just want to yell at somebody on the Senate floor. I don't always succeed, but I do my best.
Right.
It's hard sometimes.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Mark. That's a good point, because my older son was at a school where, when they would say, oh, the city of Chicago, CPS has decided to cut loose the Spanish teacher, the next thing you know, the parents would raise enough money to pay for the salary. And it was bizarre. I didn't know that was possible, to just go, here's a thought, all the parents just chipped in. And that seems like a weird way to run a school, wouldn't you say, Senator?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, it's the wrong way to run a school. That doesn't sound like public school anymore. But it also, just remember, there's a lot of neighborhoods in Chicago where that's not an option.
Exactly. And that's Mark's point, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not as if in the suburbs, even in wealthy school districts, we don't have to, you know, raise additional money for, you know, certain types of services and certain types of activities. We do that. We do that all the time. The difference is that in Wilmette, we can afford that. It's not a hardship for the overwhelming majority of people who live in the community, whereas in a lot of these neighborhoods, it's not only a hardship, but it's just not possible.
Senator, before we let you
go,
yes, please.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. I want to hear what you have to say.
The other point about this is you also have to kind of draw the line somewhere about, you know, is it never appropriate to ask parents to raise money? Well, I think it is sometimes appropriate for a real above and beyond thing. You know, I think to ask parents to raise money to have an art fair or a bake sale to pay for, you know, having an English teacher is crazy and unacceptable. To have parents raise money to, you know, put AstroTurf on the football field is probably okay. And the question is where you draw the line.
Right.
Now, what scares me about what I'm seeing these days is that what I would characterize as core educational functions are being cut, and then the parents are being told, hey, if you want that to come back, well, you gotta raise the money yourselves.
Right.
And that's not where we should be.
Well, and this is what I would ask you before you go, before we let you go, is there are people listening right now who want to know why do they got to pay for the kids on the south side of Chicago or the communities that are more challenged when it comes to raising money?
Because that's what it means to live in a society. Because either we care about everybody in the society or we just walk away from them. And I think as a human matter, as an ethical and moral matter, we ought to view people who live in the south side of Chicago in impoverished neighborhoods as part of our Illinois family and worthy of our support. And I think as a matter of economics, the idea that we've somehow accepted that giant swaths of our state will be in neighborhoods where we don't invest in schools and so we don't invest in our people and so we consign our people to a life of high likelihood of low economic productivity, that's for everybody, man. That's not a good use of resources. And so, you know, whether you look at it from a principled point of view, from a neighborly point of view, or from a brass tax economics point of view, if you want to give people opportunity and you want to use that opportunity to grow the economy, you have to invest in people.
There you go. Thank you so much, Senator Biss. And everyone can check out more about Senator Biss at his website, senatorbiss.com. That's B-I-S-S. Have safe travels. And when you're in town, love to have you in studio.
Hey, thanks so much. I look forward to it. See you guys.
Thank you.
See you.
Thank